Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we visit with the Minnesota National Guard's Command Chief Warrant Officer, and we'll discover an innovative University of Minnesota invention that's saving lives of soldiers in Afghanistan and our police officers here at home. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
The Minnesota National Guard strives to reflect the makeup of the state's general population in our ranks. To that end, we take great strides in being involved with recognizing and celebrating different cultures throughout the year. This month, our recruiters participated in a Mexican Independence Day celebration, and they're running messages in the Hispanic media publications. As September 15th through October 15th is recognized as the National Hispanic Heritage Month, it is time to celebrate the histories, cultures, and contributions of American citizens whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. There are also things we can do individually to educate ourselves on the depth and breadth of the country we live and serve in. I invite you to visit the Library of Congress's National Hispanic Heritage Month website. There you'll find personal stories of Hispanics who have served in our military, video interviews and photos about their individual backgrounds and how they found opportunities without impediments by donning the uniform of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, and Coast Guard. Some, like Joseph Medina, came from a family with a rich military background. Others, like Ava Jock or Raymond Aon, were students enticed with the notion that their country needed them. None expressed that even a hint of prejudice marked their experiences. A remarkable testimony to the democratic ideal of military service. On the Library of Congress's Hispanic America Veterans Stories page, you'll hear stories of service members from every conflict since World War II. Thank you for listening. Today's veterans are talented, team-oriented, and technologically savvy. Help good businesses get better by hiring today's veteran.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from the Minnesota National Guard's Warrant Officer Corps is Chief Warrant Officer Pete Panos. Sir, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
A warrant officer in the military is something that we really didn't have in the Air Force back in the Vietnam days, so I think our listeners are going to be interested in what a warrant officer does. But first, can you tell me a little bit about your military career? You started out, it wasn't in the Air National Guard, or in the Guard, it was in the Marine Corps.
That's correct. I started out in the United States Marine Corps in 1976, went to boot camp in MCRD San Diego. From there, Millington, Tennessee, as a fireman.
And then how did your military career progress, sir?
After I was getting close to getting out of the Marine Corps, doing my six-year hitch, I had a gentleman come up to me and ask if I was interested in joining the Army as an MP. And so I signed up for that. I did that for about a year, and then I happened to be in the right place at the right time. And as I was walking through the flight facility, I was assigned to an Army, the 406th Army Security Agency. And they flew Huey helicopters, and I was protect those helicopters. While I was walking through the flight facility, the commander of that unit said, "Hey, do you have good eyes?" I said, "I think so. Good hearing? Yes." He goes, "Want to go to flight school?" And that's how I ended up going to flight school. They had a guy drop out. They needed to fill the slot before they lost it. And I just happened to be walking through the building at that time, and I asked, "Do you want to go?" And I went.
So was that the right place at the right time?
Absolutely. Completely changed my life.
So you started out as an enlisted Marine and then enlisted soldier, and then you had an opportunity to go to flight school, and then you became a warrant officer?
Yes, sir. I went to flight school for a year and became a warrant officer one after I graduated. That would have been in 1985. Went back to the 406th ASA, which was a Army Reserve unit, flew with them until I left to come to Minnesota, which would have been in 1994.
And what they trained you, as you said, was helicopter pilot?
Yes, sir. I was a UH-1 helicopter pilot and then an instrument unit trainer for that unit.
And you've been deployed a couple times?
I have. My first deployment was to actually Fort Bliss, Texas, was the first one as a medevac pilot. And we flew medevac. Actually, the unit, the aviation unit for here from Minnesota, flew in 7 different locations in the western United States supporting operations at those military bases. And then when I came home, within a short time after that, I deployed with the Red Bulls on their 22-month deployment.
And when you deployed with the Red Bulls, were you still flying helicopters?
I was not. At that time, I was the safety officer for the brigade.
But you still had your wings.
Yes, sir. Still had my wings, still able to fly, but just they needed a safety officer. Aviation in the Army, safety isn't a career path for non-aviation warrant officers or officers, and it is a career path, though, for the aviation warrant officer. So I was also a safety officer on top of a few other different career choices I made, and they needed somebody to go, and it was me. So I was asked to go, and I said sure.
So, Mr. Panos, in the military, how many of the branches of service have warrant officers available?
They all do. All but the Air Force. The Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard all have warrant officers. The Air Force is the only one.
And what type of positions do the warrant officers fill? Are they all flight?
Nope. They have both technical and flight. The Navy most recently in 06 started a flight training program for warrant officers, and they were going to relook at that at 011, and I haven't heard what the decision was. In the Army, we cover a multitude of jobs, quartermaster, field artillery, aviation, engineers, they're ordnance officers. So there's several. In Minnesota in particular, we have 8 different fields they can go into as a warrant officer.
We're speaking with Chief Warrant Officer Peter Panos on Minnesota Military Radio. Mr. Panos, I want to understand the Minnesota National Guard. It's Army and Air. So on the Army side, you have enlisted, you have some warrant officers, and, of course, the officer corps. Now, are the warrant officers, how many are there, and what type of jobs do they fill?
Well, currently we have 225 warrant officers in the Minnesota National Guard, and we fill jobs from pilot, truck mechanics. They run a shop to repair vehicles. They run our field artillery units. They run our ordnance units. We have administrative warrant officers that take care of all the administrative HR type functions in the National Guard. So we have, like I said, 8 different fields. We also have them in the Adjutant General's Corps and then in the JAG Corps too.
Mr. Panos, for the warrant officers, and you know, I'm from the Air Force, and the old warrant officers that were there in 1970 when I went to Vietnam were left over, I think, from the Army Air Corps, and they didn't have them. So I'm trying to understand why there's a warrant officer corps. Do they all come from enlisted ranks, or do some people start off as warrant officers? And when you have the enlisted ranks and the officer ranks, what's the need? Why are the warrant officers there? What need do they fill?
Well, first, where they come from, they almost always will come from the enlisted ranks. That's, except for the aviation side, there is the possibility they can actually come from the street and come into the aviation units as a warrant officer once they get vetted through the system. But almost all our technical warrants, matter of fact, all our technical warrants come from the enlisted ranks. So as they move up, we start to try to identify people that I think would make good warrant officers, and then we will start mentoring them early on as the rank of sergeant. And for the next year or so, get them interested in the warrant officer corps, let them know, let them see what we actually do, and then bring them on into the warrant officer corps. As far as why they're there, we are technical experts, but we're the conduit between the old commander leaving or the old senior NCO leaving and the new one coming in and the troops that are always at those units.
That's the continuity.
We maintain that continuity for them. And then we're also mentors to those junior enlisted and junior officers that come into the unit, and we're advisors to those commanders.
So would it be correct to say that it's a way to retain personnel in a highly technical capacity as opposed to officers move from command to command in order to move up in rank, and the same to some degree with the enlisted ranks?
Right. That's exactly it. We we actually can retain those senior enlisted folks that are extremely good at what they do and want to stay in and continue to do that particular job and move, and they can have almost another second career.
Mr. Panos, we have to take a short break. When I come back, I'd like to talk to you about your position as Command Chief Warrant Officer of the Minnesota National Guard. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. We're speaking with Chief Warrant Officer Peter Panos from the Minnesota National Guard's Warrant Officer Corps. And, Mr. Panos, we've been talking about what a warrant officer is and what position they fill, but we haven't talked too much yet. You are the Command Chief Warrant Officer of the Minnesota National Guard. Sounds like you're the head warrant officer and the senior warrant officer reporting to the Adjutant General. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what does a Command Chief Warrant Officer do?
Well, he's basically the senior advisor, warrant officer advisor, to the Adjutant General. And my job is to keep the Adjutant General and the senior staff apprised of issues that are affecting the Warrant Officer Corps and updates in policy from National Guard Bureau and from regular the active duty Army that will affect the Warrant Officer Corps in Minnesota.
And Mr. Panos, as I understand it, now we've talked about the enlisted ranks and the officer ranks and the chief and the warrant officer ranks. As I understand it, the warrant officers are there for a couple reasons. They can go into aviation, or it's a way to keep highly technically trained military personnel within the organizations, within the units, so that when the enlisted troops turn over and when the officers move up through the chain of command, there's somebody there that knows where everything is and how to do it. Is that correct?
That's correct. We are the continuity of most military units, especially in the Army. And we're the to help that continuity happen, we are the ones that will educate the new commanders coming in and the new enlisted people coming in, and then also advise the commanders as they're leaving on things that are going on in the Warrant Officer Corps. We're the ones that will keep that continuity together.
So you said there's a little over 200 warrant officers in the Minnesota National Guard?
225.
And what would the breakout be between the aviators and the technical?
They're almost split 50-50. We have just about the same amount of aviation warrants as we do technical warrants.
So then from the technical side, they're scattered throughout all the units?
They're scattered out through 8 different fields, but you're right. Then they're scattered out throughout the entire state. We usually won't see a warrant officer in a company-level unit, a smaller unit, but once they hit battalion or brigade-sized units, then you'll start seeing warrant officers start showing up there.
So I'm curious. You've indicated that it's a method where the highly trained enlisted people and others can stay in the service longer and provide that continuity. But as the command chief warrant officer, you must take a look and see how many years the warrant officers have been in and who's ready to retire and where the holes are coming up and how do you fill those positions and how do you retain that high technical ability within the Guard so that you can maintain that continuity?
Well, and that is one of the big parts of my job is recruiting. It's not only just making sure we keep the people in, it's also recruiting new warrant officers. And we have a staff at the recruit command. I have 2 warrant officers that do nothing but warrant officer recruiting. And they'll go out and we'll identify young enlisted soldiers that we think, or their commanders think, too, that will be good warrant officer candidates. And we'll start interviewing them, seeing if we believe they would fit into our program. We'll start mentoring them at that point and then try to bring them on as they hit the areas where, or the time frames where they'll be eligible to become a warrant officer.
So these might be sergeants, staff sergeants, sergeant for a class, somebody that's shown extraordinary technical expertise and someone that you've identified that you want to keep in the service to help with that continuity issue.
Right. We look for highly motivated individuals that are in there. So when we go out, when we ask the commanders, you know, who do you see out there that you think would make a good warrant officer? Somebody highly motivated, very technically astute to what they're doing, and somebody really wants to learn and lead, then we'll go address those people and try to get them in.
Well, I guess you've asked the question, what does it take to become a warrant officer? Because on the recruiting side, you've spotted some talent, somebody that has particularly good ability and a good attitude and that you'd like to keep in the service to maintain that continuity. But outside of that, on the aviation side, where do those folks come from?
Well, aviation's a little different animal. They can come from within our ranks, and most of them do. However, there is a program, and it's still in effect, where we will take somebody off the street. They can come in and apply to be a warrant officer pilot. They go through an interview process, a kind of a vetting process on their background. And if they meet all the criteria, we'll interview them. And if they're selected, they will go to flight school. We promote them to a E5 rank, a sergeant rank. However, they don't wear that rank. They're considered a warrant officer candidate to walk. And they'll wear that rank, that dot, until they, while they're in school, say WOC is what their rank will say. But they're paid as an E5. And they'll go to flight school when they graduate. They'll be a warrant officer one, just like if we took a sergeant off the street or off out of one of our units, put him into the helicopter program, sent him to flight school along with that the candidate, they come out at the exact same rank.
We're speaking with Command Chief Warrant Officer Peter Panos on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, your position is with the Minnesota National Guard is part-time?
Yes, sir, it is.
And did that lead you to a full-time career? Or how does that tie into what do you do?
No, I have a totally separate full-time career. My full-time career is the Public Information Officer for the St. Paul Regional Office for the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
And a lot, I've seen some of your employment has gone, with the California and the police department, helicopter observer, SWAT team supervisor in St. Paul. A lot of these things are hand in hand with your military career, aren't they?
They are. My military career probably opened the door for almost everything I've done in my life up to this point. It's been a great, great opportunity for me, and it really did get me on a good path early on in my life. Well, 17 is when I joined the military, so.
And you're still here.
And I'm still here.
And, Mr. Panos, that leads me to my last question. What advice would you give anyone thinking about pursuing a career in the Minnesota National Guard and particularly becoming a warrant officer? Sounds like a pretty good position.
Well, if you're interested in becoming a member of the Minnesota National Guard, this is a great time to get into the military. There are the benefits that you can draw from military service in the National Guard are fantastic. The education benefits, the personal benefits you'll get, the personal pride you'll take. We're treated as service members now 100 times better than the service members from Vietnam. It was a disgrace the way they were treated when they came home from their wartime service. And because of them, service members now are treated like heroes, like they are. And the Vietnam veterans are the big push for that to happen to us. So I think this is a great time to be in the military. To join the Minnesota National Guard, there's great opportunities out there. It gives you a great foothold in your life to start careers. And it's a great time to do that. As far as the Warrant Officer Corps, if there are any Minnesota National Guard or Marine Corps soldiers listening right now, or Marines, we'd be glad to talk to you if you're interested in being a Minnesota National Guard Warrant Officer. We need people, and almost every field we have openings in.
And I know we had Chief Warrant Officer Roberts on the show, and he told us that by becoming a warrant officer in aviation, it really changed his life. I imagine you've got that story over and over again in the Warrant Officer Corps.
Absolutely. It gives you the opportunity to excel at a certain career path. And the Army will give you, or the military will give you, some training and some chance to work in that career path. But the Warrant Officer Corps really gives you that technical expertise to go out into the civilian world and say, hey, here I am. This is all the training I have. This is the expertise that I've developed. And that's a big benefit to employers.
Mr. Panos, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No. I want to thank you for letting me be on the show and talk a little about the Warrant Officer Corps. It's kind of a unknown entity out there in the military, but we're very strong and we're very active.
Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Command Chief Warrant Officer Peter Panos from the Minnesota National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Now it's time for Hire Minnesota's Heroes. With an unemployment rate twice the average, Minnesota veterans are facing an unemployment crisis. The good news is that you can help. Each week we'll feature one veteran story and ask you to help hire Minnesota's heroes. This week's veteran is former Army Staff Sergeant Jason Quick. Jason, welcome to the show, and can you tell us about yourself?
My name is Jason Quick. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I'm a former Army Staff Sergeant. I spent my military career as a member of the 82nd Airborne Division, and I deployed twice to Iraq during that time. And my primary responsibility while deployed was to secure my unit's commander and his staff on the battlefield. What I took away from that was a lot of leadership skills. I really like working with veterans, especially, and hearing about how I can help them more, and that's something that I'm passionate about. So I'm pursuing a degree in business administration, and hopefully I'm going to go into an MBA after that. I haven't decided yet, but thanks for having me.
All the best luck to you, Staff Sergeant Quick. Jason and hundreds of others are ready to work hard on their next mission. Can we hire Minnesota's heroes? To connect with Jason, contact the Blaine Workforce Center at 763-279-4342. That's 763-279-4342. Or to learn more, visit positivelyminnesota.com/veterans. Coming up next on Minnesota Military Radio, we'll discover an innovative University of Minnesota invention that is helping to save lives in Afghanistan and back here at home. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. This message is to help employers recruit and hire top-notch people. Did you know that only 27% of the men and women between the ages of 17 and 24 qualify to be in the U.S. military? That's right, only 27% qualify to be in the U.S. military. Did you know that 1 out of 6 veterans were on the front line? That means 5 out of 6 veterans worked in supply and support positions. Did you know that the United States military is one of the best training institutions in the world? Our veterans have received excellent training on the latest supply and support technologies, the same supply and support know-how that is required to contribute to the success of a company. The words unselfish, technology talented, and policy discipline describe most of our veterans. If those words describe the type of person you're looking for, do what I did. Add to your job postings and your website that you're a veteran-friendly employer and participate in the National Hire Veterans First campaign. Thank you, veterans. Thank you, military families.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll discover an invention from the University of Minnesota that's helping to save lives of soldiers in Afghanistan and police officers back here at home. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelido.
Military members come home from war and active duty assignments, we celebrate them and then we leave them on their own. This is a long-term problem. Sometimes issues don't surface right away. We think of dealing with veterans in 30, 60, or 90-day increments, when in reality, the 18 to 24-month period is when the family and veterans run into challenges. Helping veterans readjust to civilian life is a local issue. Our veterans organizations, such as the American Legion, the Disabled American Veterans, and the VFW, must be involved in helping veterans get links to the community. I encourage all veterans from all eras to explore membership in their local veteran service organizations. This is mutually beneficial. If you or a veteran you know needs assistance, or would like to learn more about veterans programs, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelido. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is Alan Bignall, President and CEO of Recon Robotics. Alan, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here on such an important radio station, too.
Well, it's kind of a fun show, and it's all about the military in Minnesota and veterans benefits and things we can do to help take care of today's troops and their families that maybe weren't available when I was in the service 40 years ago.
Absolutely.
You've got a very interesting company, Recon Robotics, world leader in tactical micro-robot systems. Tell me, what do you do and where did it start?
Oh, well, what we have is a small throwable robot that weighs a pound. So it's perfect for an individual or a squad to carry around. And when they want to look at something, but they don't want to get close at it, they can throw it. They can remotely control this robot, and they can have a quick look by putting the robot where they don't want to be yet. And we have about 2,000 of them out in Afghanistan right now. So it's a very effective tool.
And how big is it?
It weighs a pound. So it's about the size of a Coke can with a wheel on each side. It's 2 wheels and a tail.
And you've built it very sturdy because you're giving this to Marines and soldiers and guys out in the field.
Right. And we love to have people throw it around and really test it out. It's designed to survive a lot of tough use.
Now, if you're out on a patrol and you come up to a house or some kind of building and you want to find out what's in there before you go in, you just take this device and throw it through a door or a window, and happens next?
Yeah, or over the wall. If you're in a typical Afghan village, maybe the wall compounds. Before I go in, I want to see what's there. The way you activate it is you pull the pin, you turn on by pulling a pin on the robot, and you have a remote control unit. You throw it over the wall or on the roof or through the door, and then it sees in the dark. So you then steer it around, and on this control unit, you can see what it sees. It's very quiet, very small, so it also won't be seen by whoever you're looking at unless they happen to see it.
So there's a camera on this device?
Camera and an infrared capability, too.
So it can roam around inside a compound or a house and see where the bad guys are and
who else
is in there.
Yep.
You're saving lives, aren't you?
Well, the nice thing about this business we created here is we're saving lives, we're creating jobs, and we're making money. And what's
wrong
with that? Doesn't
get any better, does it?
You can see the smile on my face. It's not a bad place to be.
Alan, how did this get started? Where did it come from?
It all started at the University of Minnesota, who got a very large DARPA and National Security Foundation grant to investigate how do we help protect troops that are put in harm's way. It was after the Black Hawk Down incident where troops were trapped inside a tough area. And they had no way to find out what was going on in that arena. And the military said, let's start researching. How do we give them something that's light enough to carry in that they can deploy and get some immediate reconnaissance about the area around them?
So the University of Minnesota got some research funds in order to try to figure out how do we solve this problem?
How do we solve this problem? They created this technology. And after the research was all done, myself and a few other investor friends found this technology, and we created the company and said just what we said before. We think we can sell a lot of this, save a lot of lives, and make ourselves a little money at the same time.
So how many years have you been at it?
We started the business in 2006 with an official kickoff in January of 2007.
Okay.
So it's been about 5 years now.
And how many type of end users? You must have end users besides the military.
We have end users in 32 countries around the world, in police, local, state, and federal police, so FBI, as well as the Plymouth Police Department here, for instance, and pretty much all branches of the military, and then all the way through Canada, all the way out to Australia and through Europe.
And you have a facility to manufacture these devices in Minnesota?
We do. We're very proud of the fact we're Minnesotan, we build them in Winona, with a contract manufacturing partner who's also an investor in the business. It's a very nice relationship, and we're creating jobs there and creating jobs here, and it's a win-win all around.
Well, it sounds like a heck of a device. I wish you'd have brought one here today. My military producer was interested in taking a look at that.
We'll make sure everybody gets a chance to have a look at this.
All right, so let's dig in just a little bit more. By the way, we're talking to Alan Bignall, President and CEO of Recon Robotics, on Minnesota Military Radio. Alan, I read that there are two factors that can reduce casualties. One is increased situational awareness, and the other one is standoff distance.
Yes.
Can you explain how your device helps with that, your throwbot?
Well, I think we already talked a bit about situational awareness. If I can use this to help me go put my eyes where I don't want to physically be for a while, that gives me some additional information. We got questions from both military and police. Well, what happens if somebody shoots it? If I throw it in a room and someone shoots it, will it survive? And that's the wrong question we tell everybody. You've now learned something. You've learned there's someone in that room, and you've learned they're willing to shoot. That now changes how you approach that whole situation.
You thought it was dangerous, now you know.
Now you know, and lethally dangerous in a sense. And then from a standoff perspective, we designed this thing so that if you're in a building, wood, steel, concrete, or brick, you can be 30 yards away from the device while you're looking around. That's a long way inside a building. So from the studio here, we could drive it down the corridor, bounce it down the stairs to the next floor and see what was going on there. And from a outside line of sight, so if I'm on a patrol in Afghanistan and I see something in the road, I'm not sure. Is that an IED? What is that down there? I can throw this thing 100 feet or more, drive it down there and have a quick look at that device, let that area I'm concerned about and say, do I need to be concerned, or is it just an empty something on the road?
So this device can be used to check out potentially dangerous situations. It can be used to define combatants and non-combatants.
Yep.
It can be used, is the video clear enough so that you can really tell everything in a dark building?
One of the pieces of feedback we get that we really love is the fact that they think it's the crispest video they get from many of the video devices they use, cameras and other things. It's a very, very clear crystal picture.
Alan, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you about some of the feedback you're getting from some of the troops and how it's worked and maybe how it's failed and how you've improved it and those type of things. So we're speaking with Alan Bignall, President and CEO of Recon Robotics on Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I'm here with Alan Bignall, the President and CEO of Recon Robotics, a world leader in tactical micro-robot systems called Throbots. Alan, when we started, you told me that this idea came from research grants at the University of Minnesota, and then you raised some investment capital and bought it through there. Is the university still involved? Do they still have a piece of the action?
Yeah, the university is involved in two ways. One is they're an owner, part owner of the company. So as we give a return to investors, which is part of what we do and what my job is, they will benefit significantly from that. And the second is we have a long-term relationship with them, whereas if they invent something else interesting, we can go back and do a deal with them to buy more stuff from them because they're still doing all of this great research in that facility.
So they use some of those funds from these investments to further their incubator ideas.
Absolutely.
And if our listeners want to check out more information about Recon Robotics, what's your website?
Yeah, the website's a really fun website. There's some videos and other stuff on there. It's www.reconrobotics.com.
And we'll have a link up on our website at minnesotamilitaryradio.com, and you can go to facebook.com/Minnesota Military Radio Hour, and I think our military producer will have one of your videos up there as well. Alan, want to go back to some of the questions. This product has started a few years ago and it's evolved. What do the troops think of it and how's it working and has it changed any?
It's a great question. When we first brought this product to market, we sold it to SWAT teams, police. So the military was not our first market. And as you know, there's a lot of crossover between police tactical teams and the military, especially with the involvement of the Guard so much in current actions. And so the military started to buy them in small quantities, and then we started to get some great feedback from the military. We'd like it to, the terrain in at the time Iraq and then Afghanistan is not the same as in, the middle of Minneapolis. So we had an opportunity to improve its ability to climb over things, to give it a little more power, its ability to operate in the dark, which we work with the Navy SEALs on. So we've evolved several things. First thing we did was enable it to see in the absolute darkness, working with the Navy SEALs. Then we added the ability to go through sand and climb over much larger obstacles. We worked with a team from the Army called the Asymmetrical Warfare Group, which deals with how do we handle this unusual type of warfare we're in now. And finally, we worked with the Navy a little bit. And we've created a version that has magnetic wheels that will climb vertically up the side of a ship. So with the issue of piracy out there, this can help get eyes on a ship before I have to send any.
Alan, can this thing swim?
Not yet.
Not yet. But you're working on that.
I have to say not yet a lot, right? Otherwise, to tell you all these secrets would be...
As you're talking, I'm picturing soldiers and SEALs and everybody throwing these throwbots. And
we're going to be wading around up to our knees in throwbots soon.
And then coming back and saying, whoops, we broke one. Can you fix this?
Seriously, though, I get goosebumps when I get a call from someone that says, or I meet someone in a show somewhere or something, and they say, I used that robot last week. It saved our guys' lives. I mean, that's goosebump territory. That makes everything worthwhile.
Must make you feel good when you get up in the morning.
Oh, it is. It's what I love to do, is this helping people. And so
we're speaking with Alan Bignall, President and CEO of Recon Robotics on Minnesota Military Radio. Alan, what distinguishes the Recon Scout from other military robots that are being used and developed? What makes yours different?
Yeah, robots are clearly here to stay in the military of all sizes, whether it's unmanned aerial vehicles or whether it's big bomb robots on the ground, or what we've created is this concept of this personal robot I can have in my pocket in case I need it. So what makes ours different is its simplicity. It's got a pin I pull and a switch I turn on in the control unit, and that's it, and a joystick to drive it. There's no...
I could use that.
Exactly. And that's, you see, we're roughly the same age. I think we talked about it earlier. It was very important to me that I could understand it. So
makes sense to me.
And then the other thing is it's very tough. It is designed to be thrown. It's designed to be abused. So we warranty it from multiple drops from 30 feet under concrete. Horizontal throws down the street bounce along from 100 to 100 feet. So this thing is really designed to be tough. And then it's reasonably priced.
You're smiling when you say that. Did you bring some of our Red Bull soldiers to test it by throwing it?
Well, we've had all sorts of people testing it. From the big old Marine Sergeant Major who's out to prove that he can break this thing, to the Red Bulls. We had it up in at Ripley here. I mean, we've done a whole bunch of cool things with it to prove its ruggedness.
So our servicemen have been enjoying this product.
The feedback we get is it's reliable. They love it. It's simple to use. I don't need any. There's no training for this either. So it's one of those things that is just. It's one of those things we think is a difference maker in the lives of our troops.
So has the military changed? You talk about drones. We talk about robots. We talk about your throwbot. The thing has really changed, hasn't it? Technology says we're going to do this different.
Technology is evolving tactics. There's absolutely no doubt about it.
And one of the main things, especially for your throwbots, is protecting the soldiers.
Protecting the soldier. Don't risk life if you don't need to.
Give them that good situational awareness and the ability to go touch that dangerous pile of dirt without being too close.
Exactly. Without poking it with a stick. Right.
We're running out of time. I'm curious. You're working with military. I know you've got a former general on your board. You must have some military or veteran employees.
Yeah. In fact, we just did an assessment of it because we were working with Senator Klobuchar on some national issues around employing returning vets. And 30% of our company is former vets, whether they're recent vets or like some others, Vietnam era vets.
Here we are.
And our newest hired vet from the Red Bulls starts on Monday.
Fantastic.
So we're very proud of that. And we're looking forward to having him. We've already got way too much work for him to do. So we have an ongoing theme to try and hire more and more of our vets. We find them incredibly well-trained, incredibly well-prepared for what we need.
I'll bet the guy that's starting Monday is going to see if he can break one of those things.
I hope so.
Alan, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, go to the website. There's send us information, any ideas, any thoughts. There's emails and everything on there, www.reconrobotics.com.
Alan, I'd like to thank you for stopping by to visit with us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Distinct pleasure. Thank you.
That was Alan Bignall, President and CEO of Recon Robotics, world leader in tactical micro-robot systems. Joining us now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Doug Bly. Doug, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Good morning.
Doug, it's October already, and you've had another busy year, haven't you?
We have had a very busy year, Tom, and our mission count numbers are moving, up in a lot of different areas and down in some other blessed areas. But it's been a very, very busy year, there's no doubt, my friend.
How does that compare year over year, and how are your Patriot Guard riders holding up, Doug?
They're holding up really well. It's a passionate and fantastic group of people. We track our activity based on mission days, and our core mission days are funerals for our fallen and for our veterans, welcome homes, send-offs. We attend the MERTs as they have them, the monthly reintegration programs, and then we also have what we call a HAWK program, where we go into the different veterans homes and hospitals around the state and have activities. And year over year, our total count is down a little bit from last year. We're down about 330 as compared to 340 mission days. But with a lot of blessings, I can say, Tom, most of that is due to the fantastic fallout we've had in our fallen, losses from fallen here in Minnesota. So our veterans missions, which is where you and I first got to know each other, we're up quite a bit. We're up 36 missions over last year. We're at 170 now, as compared to 134 from last year, and that's a big surge. And we continue to see that year over year.
Doug, I know I was with my family when we lost the family member, and your riders were there, and it was hugely emotional for us, and a great respectful experience with your riders there. But 170 funerals so far this year, that's got to be take a little toll on your riders and be emotional for them too.
Well, it is. It does. It's very emotional for them, and it does take a toll on them. We have many days our team members show up at the Fort Snelling National Cemetery at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they can be there until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We're really going from staging area to staging area, so it does take a toll on them, and it's one of the reasons we keep our eyes out and asking people to you know, invest a little time and help out and join the organization to help us out, because we do have this, we're an entirely volunteer-driven organization, Tom, as you know, and it does take a toll with people that, you know, they can do it for so long and then they get burned out and have other things crop up in their lives. So we do ask for more folks to join us.
Doug, I've never seen a greater example of your slogan, honor, dignity, respect. The things that the riders do are just incredible. Who's eligible and where's the website?
Tom, anyone and everybody is welcome to join your organization. You do not need a motorcycle and you do not have to be a veteran. And all you have to do is go to our state website, www.mnpatriotguard.org. And MN Patriot Guard, all one word. Look on the left, click join us, and it's all based on email and a zip code and a email address, and you're on, and you'll start driving the information to you. And all you need to bring is a 3x5 United States flag and a pole, and be willing to stand there with us.
And the other requisite is to have a good heart and want to go out and do these things.
Well, that's, you know, once they click join us on that website, Tom, they're the patriotism and the compassion and the heart's already a given. We just got to get them there.
Doug, you and your Patriot Guard riders are doing a great job. Keep it up.
Thank you, Tom. And thanks to all of our veterans and those who are and have served. And I can only ask one thing of you, and this is based on our active duty missions. If you still hear war in your head, no matter for how long ago, please go to VA. We want to stand for you because you passed on from a ripe old age, not because of self-inflicted.
Help is there, isn't it?
It is there, and we need to encourage everyone to take advantage of it.
Doug, thanks for joining us again today, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Tom.
That was Doug Bly from the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We have one very important mention today. If you've served in a combat zone since 2008, you could be owed money. Thousands of Minnesota veterans are encouraged to take advantage of a refundable tax credit about to expire. To receive Minnesota's $59 a month credit for military service in a combat zone, veterans must file with the Minnesota Department of Revenue before October 15th. We have links to everything you'll need in our Facebook page at facebook.com/Minnesota Military Radio. Remember, please remember to file before the October 15th deadline. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Command Chief Warrant Officer Peter Panos, Alan Bignall, Doug Bly, Commissioner Larry Chalideau, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about Fort Snelling's last war and learn how to support military kids this holiday season. That's coming up this next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.